Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Laborers International stumping for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And today on the show, kicking off the Tradeswomen Build Nations Week, the latest from the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council and the power of those swing state voters. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, October 12th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, also on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcast. We have three guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off shortly with Gina Walsh. She's with the Insulators Union, and she is the main organizer for a huge conference this Saturday called the Trade Women's Build Nation Conference. We've been talking about it on the show for the last couple of weeks. This is a very monumental event. Normally, it's a three-day event, but hey, we got a pandemic going on, so they had to do something. She's going to talk about switching gears, turning this into a virtual conference, and they're expecting women, not just from the United States, but from around the entire world that will be taking part in this. And if you want to get some more information on it, just go to NABTU, that's a North America Building Trades website, NABTU/TWBN, Trade Women's Build Nations Conference. And she's got a great story to tell because Gina got involved in the trades back in the late 70s, and she'll talk about how difficult it was because it was exclusively a guy's thing. And today, fast forward to today, and her daughter is now in an apprenticeship program. It's amazing what has happened in a short amount of time. All good things, no doubt. Second guest is Andrew Tinkham. Andrew's one of our regulars, and he does the PR for the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, occ.ohio.gov. Two things we're going to get into. Number one is what's going on with this House Bill 6, and that's the legislation that's tainted because of the scandal in the state of Ohio dealing with the former Speaker of the House, Larry Householder, who apparently took a whole lot of money from the energy company, First Energy. And he, along with four others, were all indicted by the FBI and face unbelievable charges. We're talking like a $60 million payoff. So we'll get an update on that. And the second item that Andrew is going to talk about, and this is perfect for Halloween since Halloween is right around the corner, is vampire power. Now is the perfect time to talk about this. And he reports, if you ever felt like your utility bills are haunting you, you'd be surprised to find that many household appliances continue to use power when left plugged in. And I suggest you do this, maybe at night, not during the day. Go around your house at night and take a look at how many lights are on, small little lights, like on your computer, maybe a power strip, your phone. A lot of people leave their phone on all night, and I can understand that too, especially in an emergency. But when you add it all up, we're talking a chunk of money here that you could be saving. Now, some of these things you want to keep plugged in. I totally understand that, but many of them can be unplugged because they're sucking your power, just like a vampire sucks. Well, not power, but you know what I mean. Anyway, Andrew's going to be our second guest. And lastly, Steve Rosenfeld will be joining us. Steve is an interesting guy. He's editor and chief correspondent of Voting Booth, which is a project of the Independent Media Institute. He's reported for National Public Radio, Christian Science Monitor Radio, as well as reporting on with a number of progressive publications, including Salon, Alternet, The American Prospect, just to name a few. And his topic is big swing state hurdles. Across the country, the Democratic Party and voting rights groups have been winning legal victories. We've talked about this with the Alliance for Retired Americans. They're very, very vigilant. And he says, okay, they're winning these victories to make it easier to vote in the presidential election, but no ruling addresses an issue that some experienced election officials foresee as likely to delay voting at Election Day polling places on November 3rd. What may trigger voter confusion and traffic jams are rules that do not allow voters to simply drop off an absentee ballot at an Election Day poll. In some states, these voters can wait in line, and after some completing paperwork, will get to vote with a regular or provisional ballot, or those voters can go to a local government office to return their absentee ballot or find a drop box if that return option is offered. Very confusing. If you've been following this, and every state is different because they have elections officials that may go to the far left or go to the far right. It's hard to find them in the middle. And we're already voting in America. Already voting. So Steve Rosenfeld will button up the show as our third guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, after discussions with leaders and members, the General Executive Board of the Laborers International Union of North America, better known as LIUNA, has unanimously and enthusiastically endorsed Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris for President and Vice President of the United States. And I mention that because LIUNA is the presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. And this is something that Terry O'Sullivan posted on his webpage. It's LIUNA.org. He says briefly, Biden never forgets where he came from, never forgets the value of hard work and those who do it, and never forgets that the greatest asset of our country are its working men and women. During these challenging times, our nation desperately needs the steady hand and strong, inclusive leadership that Joe Biden will provide. As we face a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, the worst economic downturn in decades, and widespread social unrest, Joe will bring all Americans together to solve these problems and move forward as one united republic with liberty and justice for all. And then he goes on to talk about Kamala Harris being a proud child of decent, hardworking immigrants who, like so many of our ancestors, came to this great land to build a better life for themselves as well as their children. That's just a sampling. You can get more at LIUNA.org. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we link up with Gina Walsh and talk about the Trades Women Build Nations Conference, exclusively here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And we're back. Show's called America's Workforce, and we are available on various platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Don't forget, we're on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcasts. Let's go to line number one and welcome our rock star from the insulators, Gina Walsh. She's a deputy director of the Labor Management Cooperative Trust of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators. We had Greg Rivard on the show last week, and he said, boy, she's a rock star when it comes to getting women involved in the trades, and that's why she's on the show today. Hey, Gina, did you catch out that show from Greg?
I did, Flash. Thanks. I mean, I've strove all my life to be a rock star, so now I'm there.
Love it. Well, Gina is involved in a huge event this coming Saturday, October 17th, and this was supposed to be a three-day conference attracting women from all around the world, and it's called the Tradeswomen Build Nations Conference. Gina, talk to me about where we are with this. We had you on the show a couple weeks back and kind of tease this conference a little bit. I want to get into more details. And where are we with the registration right now? How's it looking?
Well, it's looking good. Right now we have lots of sisters signing up across the country, and I'm excited. It's not it's going to be a new platform for all of us, but I think since this worldwide pandemic, we've kind of mastered having meetings virtually, so it's going to be exciting. And the best part about it is it's free, no charge. Everybody gets to come for free because we don't have any expenses. I'm saddened that we don't get to see each other in person, but we need to be safe and follow the rules so we can get through this. But it's going to be an exciting conference nevertheless. It's been pared down to one day. You can register at nabtu.org/EWBN. That's nab2.org/Tradeswomen Build Nations. And there's another thing below that registration. If you click on the big blue letters, that's where you register for the conference, where it says now open, registration now open. Below that, many of the crafts are having caucuses either right after or the day before for their members. The registration for that is also on that page. And those are exciting meetings. It's where the women get together with women from their trades only. So A lot of this is a two-part deal. We're going to have some exciting speakers. And the workshop is going to center around the Lean In program, which has been adapted for women in the trades. And we're very excited about that because it's a new tool for the women in the trades to use. And we're going to launch it nationwide. It was piloted last year in St. Louis, Missouri, my home local, and in Canada. So we are launching it next Saturday, this coming Saturday on the 17th, through our workshop. So it's pretty exciting. I'm anxious to see the feedback from the sisters across the country in Canada.
Now, Gina, a three-day conference, generally, how many people attend, and what do you expect for this virtual conference coming up this Saturday?
So we have had nearly 3,000 people at our previous conferences the last 3 days. I am hoping for more to attend because we've broken down some of the barriers that might have prevented women from attending in the past, like cost or travel. You know, some people just can't afford to take off work to go to a three-day event somewhere halfway across the country. You know what? All you have to do is travel to your computer wherever it is in your home. Mm-hmm. You can log on and be a part of this exciting event. We're going to have lots of speakers on Saturday. Sean McGarvey's going to be speaking. Liz Schuler's going to be speaking. And I can't tell you who the keynote is yet because it's a secret.
Okay. It's great that you brought up Liz Schuler. We're going to have her on the show this coming Wednesday to talk about that conference. And she's got an interesting background, too, because her dad was an electrical worker. She comes from the IBEW. And she'll talk about the male-dominant industries of years past. And they're still dominant. Let's address that right now, Gina, because you had a tough time breaking in to the insulators. And when was that? Was that going back to the 70s or 80s? Kind of, if we could go back to that time and tell us about your struggle, because this is a story that other women want to hear about. Go ahead.
I started in the trade at the very end of the 70s. I had worked for about 6 months to a year on permit with the elevator constructors in St. Louis. They had gone on strike, so therefore I was unemployed along with all the other elevator constructors. And I wasn't a member of their union. I was a temporary employee of theirs. We were sitting around my mother's house one Saturday night, and those were the days of one car per family, and it was raining. So Mom and Dad said, yeah, nobody's taking the car out. My brother had a bunch of buddies in to play poker, and we're sitting around the kitchen table, and one of them said, well, my craft is never going to take women in the trades. And I thought, okay, we'll see. So I went the next Monday morning, since I was unemployed and didn't have a job, and went to his union hall to apply for the apprenticeship program. And I sat some more. And I sat even longer. I was there all day, probably about 6 to 8 hours. And finally, the guy came out and he said, hey, listen, you've got staying power, but if we have to hire women, we'll call you. And I, you know, kind of chucked it into a wash and thought, oh, well, you know, a waste of day. About 9 months later, I got a phone call. Would I come down and fill out paperwork if I was still interested in beginning an apprenticeship program with the Heat and Frost Insulators? And I did. And when I got there, the guy asked me, he said, why didn't you tell me who your dad is? I've known him all my life. I said, well, my dad wasn't applying for the job I was.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I wanted to get it. But I've enjoyed this craft more than once. It has saved my life. It's turned out to be a family for me. And it's not a job. It's a career. And I loved what I did. Now I'm in another facet of that career, and I'm proud of the work that my local and my international does. My daughter's a second-generation pipe insulator, and I'm proud of that. You know, when I started out, there weren't many women. There were no women on the job site. And I can tell you that even today, when these sisters go to job sites, oftentimes they are the only woman on the job. In this conference, and these programs that we're talking about, like Lean In, these are places where women can go and talk to other people who've had the same experiences as they did, maybe the same problems, how they worked it out, and give everybody a different vantage point. We have many folks that participate. Our business managers participate. Our international presidents and VPs participate. It's a very supportive event for women in the trades. And you are so lucky next week to be talking to Liz Schuler, because she is a rock star. The women that organized this conference, Vicki O'Leary from the Ironworkers, Laura Stager from the UA. I mean, I could go on, and I shouldn't name these women because you always miss somebody. But this is a group effort of some really strong, dedicated women putting this together. And every year it gets bigger. And it gets better. And I suggest to you that the next time that we're mobile, you participate.
Okay.
We're going to be in New Orleans next year, and the energy is electrifying. And if you can see it, you would be surprised. Everybody that comes and sees it and observes, they're like, oh, my goodness. They can't believe how energizing it is for these young women.
I would imagine you're expecting to be in person in New Orleans next year. Is that the game plan?
I am hopeful. You know, we will do what we have to do. If we have to be virtual next year, we will.
Uh-huh.
But my hope that we can bring this to some closure and get back to the way life is meant to be. But if not, we'll fight through it, right?
Yeah. Well, you got my interest on New Orleans. St. Louis, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Hey, we have one of the biggest Mardi Gras outside of Badangia, Colombia, in New Orleans. So we do all right here.
Oh, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. Would you say that men are more accepting of women in the trades today? I mean, you had a rough time there. They're saying, wait, this is not a woman's job. Come on. Come on.
Well, I'd say that I got in and proved myself. I was accepted, and the folks that I worked around, the men in my craft, now I'm telling you, in my craft, not necessarily the crafts around me, they mentored me. Once I was there, they knew I wasn't going away, and they helped me learn my craft. But once you get out of your time, I would show up on jobs and just little stuff like, I don't know how familiar you are with construction sites, but if you're working on the ninth floor and the only means to get to up there, if there's not a buck hoist or an elevator yet, you got to carry material up 9 or 10 flights of steps, and fire doors get locked on you. It's frustrating because you get halfway up, you can't get in. You got to go all the way down, find a key. Just silly things like that. People would lock doors. But you know what? You just talk to people and say, hey, would you treat your sister that way? Would you treat your mother that way? A lot of times things can be worked out if you just talk through them. And sometimes not. But I was fortunate enough to have a good career in my field. And as you can see, I feel like I am valued personally through my internet, my work with my international and the work with my local union here in St. Louis. I was fortunate enough to come up with a group of guys that are now in leadership here with my local. So we're all on the same page. We all came up together and advanced our careers in whatever field, be it politics or be it politics within the local. And I've been fortunate enough to share my time with them.
Oh, so, yeah. You've worn many hats. You're also in the state legislature, and you did some wonderful things there. You mentioned your daughter. Now, how far along is she? This is a two-part question. How far along is she in the insulators, and is she taking part in the conference this Saturday?
So first, she is now a journeyman. She's been out of her time. It'll be almost 2 years in January. And yes, she is taking part in this Saturday's conference. I actually took her to the conference before she was an apprentice. And she was just so impressed. The kid went to college. She took out student loans, got her degree, and then came home and said to me, can I do what I want to do now? I'm like, sure, you're grown up. You got a college degree. Go to work. Get a job. She says, good. I went to your union hall and applied for the apprenticeship yesterday. I said, good on you, sister. And that's what she always wanted to do. I mean, out of my three girls, she was the quietest one. She called me once she was at college and said, you told me everybody had to go to college. I said, oh, did I leave off the part about everybody in my household? Because I wanted them to have a degree, something to fall back on. But, you know, as I learned through my experience with my daughter, and this is so true, I post stuff all the time about this, college is not for everyone. You know, and if I thought about myself, it wasn't for me. I had no desire to do that, but I had a driving desire to work outside and to be around other people all the time. And you know the beauty about my job when I was in the trades, if I didn't like the job I was on, I knew in 4 to 8 weeks I'd be moving on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I worked for outside contractors. I worked on new construction. So you were always moving, and you were always experiencing new people and new job sites, new areas of your state. So it has been a phenomenal career, and I was blessed to have it. I am just really happy with how everything turned out since 1979.
It's a great story, and it's one of many great stories that's going to be told at the Trade Women's Build Nations Conference that's going to happen this Saturday, virtually. I want to give the website again for registration, and it's free. You got to love that. NABTU.org/TWBN. NABTU.org/TWBN. And they expect thousands of women from around the world to be attending virtually. Good stuff, Gina. Always a pleasure having you on the show. Good luck to you this Saturday, and I'm sure we'll be talking. Let's do a recap. How's that sound? Maybe after the conference. I know I'll give you a couple of days to rest and everything, kind of regroup, and let's do a recap. How's that sound?
It sounds great, Flash, and thanks for having me.
You got it. Gina Walsh talking about the big conference this weekend. Trade Women's Build Nations. Gotta love that. Trades Women Build Nations Conference. NABTU.org/TWBN. Quick break. Andrew Tinkham on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council coming up next. You are listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Don't forget, you can follow us. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line and rejoin one of our regulars, Andrew Tinkham, on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Real simple website, occ.ohio.gov. Two stories we're going to delve into today. One we've been following for a couple of months. It involves nuclear power and a controversial bill called HB6. And with Halloween right around the corner, vampire power. I love talking about vampire power. Andrew, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having our office on your show again. As always, we always enjoy sharing this information to your listeners.
There you go. All right, talk to me about what's going on with this, I guess, because of the scandal. In July of this year, we had the Speaker of the House, $60 million that First Energy paid off to various lawmakers to get some legislation passed. Where are we right now, and what's the position of the Ohio Consumer Council?
Yes, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have probably heard of the $60 million scandal that involved the former Speaker of the House and some of his political associates. The U.S. Attorney's criminal complaint regarding House Bill 6 was filed against Householder, four others, and Generation Now on July 23rd, 2020. The complaint included allegations of racketeering activity, which included wire fraud, extortion, bribery, and money laundering. Householder's criminal enterprise received $60 million from March 2017 to March 2020 from company entities, which is believed to be First Energy entities, including First Energy Solutions. The money flowed through Generation Now, which was a 501c4 nonprofit entity. The money was used for bribes to obtain speaker position for Householder and increase and expand his power to enrich those in Householder's enterprise to conceal and protect Householder's enterprise from public exposure. In exchange, Householder's enterprise helped pass House Bill 6, giving a billion-dollar bailout to two nuclear plants affiliated with First Energy, and also worked to defeat ballot initiative against House Bill 6, which was going on last fall. Due to these recent developments, the Ohio General Assembly introduced companion bills, House Bill 738 and House Bill 746 and Senate Bill 346, that would repeal House Bill 6 and revive the prior law. Now, House Bill 6, which was signed into law in July 2019, It provided over $1 billion in subsidies for two nuclear power plants in Ohio that were owned by First Energy Solutions, which is now Energy Harbor. The subsidies would also support two 66-year-old uneconomical coal-fired power plants, which one is located in southern Ohio and one is located in Indiana, along with six new solar farm installations. The bill would have charged residential customers up to $2.35 a month to receive electricity from an investor in electric company, which here in Ohio would include Cleveland Electric Illuminating, Ohio Edison, Toledo Edison, AEP, Dayton Power and Light, and Duke Energy. Now, the Office of the Ohio Consumers Council, you know, opposed House Bill 6 from pretty much the time it came out, and we supported these repeal bills to overturn the subsidies. And as an office, we support a free market for electric generation, not mm-hmm. subsidies that pick winners and losers. You know, a free market electric generation competition without subsidies, we found that it produces lower prices and higher innovation for Ohio families and businesses, which is what the Ohio General Assembly envisioned when they deregulated electricity back in 1999. You know, I know we've talked about these subsidies the electric companies have received since 2000, but just as a reminder, from 2000 to 2019, customers have been made to pay $14.7 billion in subsidies to these electric companies, and House Bill 6 would just add an additional $1.7 billion to that total.
Wow.
Now, First Energy Solutions bankruptcy filing revealed that from June 2018 until January 2020, Davis, Bessie, and Perry nuclear power plants have been profitable without subsidies, which is important to keep the plant running while maintaining jobs. In 2020, Energy Harbor spent $800 million in stock buybacks before collecting subsidies approved as part of House Bill 6. And, you know, these examples make it hard for Energy Harbor, I think, to argue that needs subsidies for Ohioans to keep the nuclear plants operating. You know, in an effort to protect residential utility consumers from this bribery scheme, you know, the OCC has asked the Public Utilities Commission to conduct an independent management audit to investigate whether First Energy and its affiliates improperly spent money collected from customers through what was called a distribution modernization rider or other customer collections in their pursuit to bail out the nuclear power plants through an independent auditor. Now, on September 15th, the PCO instructed First Energy to turn over documents proving they did not use ratepayers' money to fund activities related to House Bill 6 by September 30th. Now, PCO's limited review and its reliance on self-reporting by First Energy are inadequate for consumer protection. You know, and indeed, the PCO's approach could enable First Energy to thwart consumer protection, and that is why UCC proposed broad and fair investigatory procedures, including but not limited to a management audit and naming an independent auditor for checks and balances on First Energy's account of what happened. So we're kind of waiting to see, you know, what happens there. In the General Assembly currently, newly elected House Speaker Cupp created House Select Committee on Energy Policy and Oversight to review the repeal bills. And they've had several hearings since then, and our office has been able to testify, you know, in support of repealing these bills. And also we are providing testimony on Senate Bill 346, where they're also having hearings. So we'll see what happens. You know, the General Assembly, you know, we're getting ready for this 133rd General Assembly to wrap up here at the end of the year, and definitely keep you posted as things move along.
Mm-hmm. What's your gut telling you? Think we'll see something this year, or will it be kicked into 2021?
Well, you know, it's hard to predict, and that's a good question. It's, I guess we need to see how long these committees continue to have hearings. Who knows what can happen in lame duck? You know, I've seen some weird and strange things happen during lame duck session. Boy, I wish I could predict, but it's really hard to tell.
It's hard to believe that we're looking at subsidies since 2000 of almost $15 billion, and HB6 would add another $1.7 billion to that total. Wow. All right, let's move to Vampire Power. Had this conversation with you and other folks from the OCC over the years, and there's a lot of power that people are using in their homes that they may not be aware of. Talk to me about this, Andrew.
Yeah, I think a lot of your listeners will be surprised how many products they could have in their household that is plugged in, not turned on, but is actually using power. And with Halloween just a few weeks away, it's always a perfect time to talk about vampire power. Because really, do you ever feel like your utility bills are haunting you? Which sometimes I feel like my utility bills are haunting me, even as much as I try to keep them down. But it may surprise your listeners that they might have energy vampires that are lurking throughout their home, sucking money out of your wallet, which obviously can be pretty frightening. Vampire power, also known as standby power, are household products that continue to use power when left plugged in but not in use. And it's kind of amazing. According to Energy Star, the average household wastes $100 every year on vampire power. You know how much candy corn you can purchase for $100? Maybe even pumpkin.
A lot.
That's quite a bit. Probably three or four or five pizzas. But, many of these everyday appliances and electronic devices like TVs, microwaves, computers, even clock radios use vampire power. Items that have a digital display, chargers, or remote controls usually use vampire power, which can be spooky if you think about it. Mm-hmm. Devices can vary in how much power they use. The average home has 25 to 30 electronic devices. And what I would challenge your listeners to go room by room and see how many products they have that either has a remote control, a charger that charges some type of device or some type of product, or has a digital display. You know, when I did it, I was well over 30, unfortunately. So, it's very common to see that many in your household. And just to kind of give you an example of how much energy they're using, is a computer and a monitor uses 22.5 watts of electricity while in standby mode. You have digital cable box, television, DVD player, and video game console combined can use 30 watts of power in standby mode. Once again, that's just money that you're spending for something you're not even using.
Right.
Now, we do have some good news. However, you don't need a wooden stake or garlic to stop these energy vampires. Devices with Energy Star logo use less electricity and are more energy efficient, helping you reduce vampire power in your home. And there's many other things that you can do to combat vampire power. Once again, when you're done charging a tablet or a laptop or a cell phone, unplug the charger when you're done charging the device. If you have televisions you don't use often, or if it's a DVD player you only use occasionally, unplug that product or put them on a power strip and turn the red button off, and that power strip will cut all the power going to those devices. Even unplugging things like your coffee maker or your toaster oven, or even if you can get to your microwave and unplug it, that's a way mm-hmm. to save money. And we have a lot of great tips on vampire power. If you go to our website, www.occ.ohiosped.gov, we have a fact sheet on vampire power, and it can give you more tips and help identify how you can save money by unplugging these products.
There you go. occ.ohio.gov. I like what you write here. Vampires are scary, but losing money is scarier.
Anytime you lose money, it's scarier, isn't it?
It is. All right, Andrew, you take care. Thank you so much for the content today. Again, the website, occ.ohio.gov. Lots of good information there. You take care. Be safe. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
That sounds good. Thank you, and happy Halloween.
Once again, Andrew Tinkham on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, occ.ohio.gov is that website for more information. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Steve Rosenfeld will be talking about the power of those swing state voters. That's next right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a 500,000 strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro, 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number, 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And you can follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcast. Just follow us there. Let's go to our live line. Haven't had this guy on for a while. His name is Steve Rosenfeld, and he is with an organization called Voting Booth, and he's been following what's going on in America with regard to the vote. And you know, there's a whole lot of controversy on that, much of it coming from the White House. Hey, Steve, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm so delighted to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Voting Booth? I'm reading this is a project of the Independent Media Institute. Give me some explanation on that first.
Okay, so I'm a longtime political reporter. I've been covering national elections and politics since the mid-90s. And I've been covering money in politics first for National Public Radio, Christian Science Monitor, then the topics change and you move from one organization to another. So these days I have a project which I created and I'm the lead reporter. It's called Voting Booth. It's run out of this place called the Independent Media Institute, a nonprofit. And basically I am trying to monitor the ways that we either expand or suppress voting. And it's coming against the backdrop of what we're seeing right now, you know, super partisan elections, polarized electorate, new voting technology and machinery, and all kinds of other things like disinformation, leaving people with doubts about whether we can trust. What can we trust? What can we count on?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sphere I'm in.
Yeah. Well, we've been following one of our regular guests on the show is the Alliance for Retired Americans, and I'm very happy to report, and you're probably aware of this, they're going state by state.
Yep.
Trying to make voting easier, especially during a pandemic. You know, we're getting this pushback. Oh, you got to show up in the polls. You got to show up in the polls and all this fraud that's going to take place. But at least they're moving the needle in the right direction. Now, my question to you, is that happening all over? Is enough of that happening? What's your take on it all?
Well, my take on it is it's happening in more places than not. It's not a completely black and white picture. So, for example, in states that are in red supermajority states, what do I mean by that? Florida, Republican governor, Republican majority legislature, they were able to pass bills and then go to court and have them defended that stopped 1.4 million former felons from being re-enfranchised unless they paid their fees. Actually, the number is about 750,000 who haven't paid past fees. So that's an example of where progress from the participation side was not happening. Then what you have is you have other states. You have states like Iowa, where you have a somewhat moderate Republican Secretary of State, and then there's been litigation. On the one hand, you can start counting the ballots a little bit earlier. That's a victory for election officials. On the other hand, there are some other restrictions on when – so that voters have some more hoops to go through if they want to vote by mail. And basically, you have this pattern going on from state after state after state. And, yes, the Alliance for Retired Americans has been in court. They've been winning. But there have never been more lawsuits to try to delay the process. And they're filed by people who are partisan on both sides. You know, delay the process by Republicans, speed up and open up the process by Democrats. And that's the landscape.
Steve, let's go back to Florida a little bit, if you don't mind. That's an interesting one because the people in that state I guess this was a statewide referendum, it gave the opportunity to ex-felons to vote. But then the legislature came back and said, well, if you want to vote, you got to pay your fines. And then the judge said, well, wouldn't that be like a poll tax?
Right.
To your point, there's a lot of, you know, pushback on, in some of these states. But then again, aren't some major people like Michael Bloomberg, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, aren't they paying those fines right now? Is that okay to do?
They're trying to pay some of them. And yes, you know, here's the Republicans are arguing that it's not okay to do. But actually, this close to an election, you're almost not going to get a day in court. You're going to have a day in the court of public opinion. So they're basically making claims like you would have in a lot of the political ads that are really aren't factually supported, and no one's going to try to correct them. So the key issue there is Michael Bloomberg, by paying the fines of 30,000 felons, which he raised $16 million to do, is he buying their vote? Now, the Republicans are saying, well, of course he's buying their vote. Well, why would he be paying their fines? But the laws, including – this is where it gets into the weeds – but the laws and former opinions, you know, by the Department of State in Florida have said, if you're not explicitly making a deal where you're paying for somebody or doing them a favor in exchange for a specific vote, then you're not buying their votes. But you – but the thing is, that level of detail you don't get in the press conferences and the innuendo and the political statements. You know, so this is the season we're in. There's a lot of that kind of, you know, garbage noise. You know, people pretending something's a bombshell when it's not, when it's basically a hiccup. But oh my God, mm-hmm. You know, they're good actors on television. So.
Yeah. Well, many are saying we're not going to know the winner on November 3rd unless we're seeing a landslide on behalf of Trump or Biden. What's your gut telling you?
I'm not so sure that's entirely as true as locked down or as certain as people think. If Biden wins, he's going to win early and it's going to be quick. And there are some states that people are not paying attention to where they're going to have the results really fast. And Florida and Arizona are the two that come to mind the most. And those are big presidential swing states. In Florida, they start counting see, it's not just counting, it's processing. What does that mean? You know, when 50 or 60% of the people mail back an absentee ballot, that envelope, literally the envelope, has to be checked in like a person would check in at a precinct. You have to identify the voter, which means you have to look at the way they sign it and their signature and the address and all these things, just like you would flash an ID if you're in one of those states where you don't just sign your name. So anyway, yeah. That takes time. That the counting doesn't take much time at all. That's just running them through these high-speed scanners. So the thing is, states like Florida start that processing. They're starting that processing like October 15th. Arizona starts at 16 days out, so they're going to have results. If they're not going to have them, they're going to have like 90% or more of the results, you know, sometime in the wee early morning hours on Wednesday a.m. if they don't have it, you know, sooner than that. And other places like Pennsylvania, this is where it gets really interesting. Congress didn't pass any money after last spring to help these jurisdictions out, but Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg gave $300 million to these two nonprofits that are granting it. They've gotten requests from 1,100 jurisdictions across the country. And some of this money is in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan are being used to buy high-speed scanners. And they're going to pay to have the technicians from the companies run the thing. So it's not like local election officials have to learn how to, you know, read the manuals. So the thing is, you might have results in these, you know, in central Pennsylvania, in these counties that were, you know, they voted for Obama, but then they voted for Trump. You might have results there a lot faster than people think. Now, maybe not 100% of the vote, but if Trump is pretty much even or a couple points behind in Berks County, which is Allentown, the Lehigh Valley, that means he's lost the state. So the thing is, this might be over quicker than people think. If it's not... If it's close and the longer it goes on, that's when you go into these, you know, rabbit hole scenarios we've been hearing about all over the place, like, oh my God, it's going to end up in Congress and blah blah blah. But people are underestimating really how some places are going to be able to count fast.
We broadcast this show out of the state of Ohio, and Ohio has been a bellwether state, a state many have said if you don't win Ohio, you don't win the White House. What's your take? Now, that there's some chiseling of that opinion over the years. What's your take on that right now?
I think it's a little less true than it used to be. You would used to say the same thing about Missouri, by the way, and I think both Ohio and Missouri have become redder. They're on the red side of purple, not the blue side of purple. I mean, you should tell me what you think of that. But what happens in Ohio is that you've got this tension in Ohio that is indicative of sort of the last Hail Mary move that the Republicans can make. And this is what it is. You see this in Pennsylvania, too. You've got this tension between these Republican legislative leaders who are basically saying, don't do anything to help more people vote, make the process easier, you know, in a pandemic, just follow the old rules and slow it down, versus, either a Secretary of State or sometimes in Pennsylvania to the courts that say, no, we're going to try to do more. And you've had these legal fights. So your Secretary of State in Ohio, who is generally, you know, a moderate and reasonable Republican who has tried to help people do, you know, get ballots and get them in, basically has had his hands tied again and again by these legislators. And at this point in time, the legislatures in Ohio are winning. Now, in Pennsylvania, which is right across the border from where you are, you have a state Supreme Court that has one of the most pro-voter state constitutions in the country. And there was a decision out of the state Supreme Court last week that basically said, hey, legislature, you're sitting on your hands. You're not doing anything. You're not upholding the Constitution that you swore to uphold by making voting easier. So we're going to, we're going to order this, this, and this to help voters. And the Republicans have basically gone back and filed an appeal to try to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court that basically will allow federal courts to overrule any kind of state decision. So that's their Hail Mary. It's like, can a federal judge appointed by conservatives or basically overrule, a state court and a state constitution that's trying to make voting easier? So all goes down to, are you going to let ballots that are postmarked arrive after Election Day if they're postmarked on time? Are you going to allow drop boxes to be put out there? You know, all those things. And that's kind of where we're at. We're sort of getting near that tipping point. So, Ohio, it's a little rough. It's not as easy as it could be. Pennsylvania, it's a little easier, but we'll see what happens. And you go swing state by swing state. We just talked about Florida. And, everyone has got a different version of this mix of easy and difficult.
Well, I tell you, you've got nothing to worry about when it comes to content for your website.
Oh, my God, it's overwhelming. Actually, it's really hard because the thing is, there's so much stuff going on, and it's all important. And the question is, why does this process have to be so damn
exactly? I say this on the show all the times. Why are we making this process so difficult? My gosh, it should be easy, and we should encourage everybody to vote, but we don't do that.
Yeah,
and then the people have the opportunity to vote, and they still don't vote. That's crazy in itself.
I mean, it's like if you don't win, run again and try again, and then maybe it'll be your turn. I mean, my God, that's kind of where my bias is that people should be able to vote, the results should be transparent and accurate, and we should abide by a process that's essentially well run.
All right, Steve, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Steve Rosenfeld, editor-in-chief correspondent of Voting Booth. What's the best way to access information to the Voting Booth?
Yeah, so I put up a new website. It's votingbooth.media. You'll see all of my pieces, daily stuff that's picked up by a lot of other places, and it's all there, votingbooth.media. And no matter what you do, make a plan and vote. It really matters. Believe me, if it didn't matter, there wouldn't be all these complications facing voters.
There you go, Steve. You take care and keep in touch, okay?
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Interesting guy, Steve Rosenfeld, again reporting from the Independent Media Institute on voting in America today. It should be easy, but boy, have we made it a complex situation. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, more from the iron workers talking about women in the trades and the communication workers of America. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.